Michelle.
What's going on, Anna?
How are you? Thanks so much for coming on the pod.
It's fun to be on the pod. I forgot what I was doing with my phone. I was making sure it was off, I think.
No worries at all.
It's great. I took the train in. I took the Long Island Railroad in, and I heard the lady in back of me say how she'll pay her warrant, but she's not going to pay the fine.
She'll pay her warrant? Oh, yeah. Was it like a problem with the ticket or something?
No, this was a friend of hers on the
phone. I was a friend.
Yeah, people going to the Yankee game, so
they were getting all hyped up and everything.
Yeah.
I appreciate you making the trip out to Hoboken. Where do you live now?
Suffolk County.
Suffolk County. Oh my God, that's a trip. Oh my God, because my fiance, she's from Ronkonkoma originally.
Ronkonkoma.
Some Long Island insight. Are you from Long Island originally, Michelle?
Yes.
Where in Long? From Suffolk County originally.
Mm. From North Massapequa.
From North Massapequa. I didn't know that. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm from originally from Mockville Center in Nassau. And then when I was right around 9/11, my parents moved to Garden City.
Good money.
And that's a big... Well, it's funny because like my dad grew up in Rockville Center, and he always wanted to live in Garden City. He's a contractor, always wanted to buy like a fixer-upper house there. And he did it to his credit. They bought like a fixer-upper and did all the work himself. And it's really working out for him. They're doing...
I went to high school with people that lived in Garden City, and it was just so like, what do people do for a living? Old money.
And now it's...
Alfred Hitchcock, The Birds, they filmed that in Old Westbury.
Oh, they did? Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah, my driver's ed teacher took us there.
Oh, really? So you did driver's ed like on Long Island and stuff too?
Yeah, I went to Holy Trinity, so we did driver's ed. So you drove up to the beach, you drove up to Wanto Parkway, and me and this, my friend Amory, she'd go, watch, let's see how fast we can go before the driver's ed teacher, Mr. Mandel, hits the brake, and she would, I would always chicken out, and he'd be like, Amory, got a heavy fire.
The classic, just driver's ed.
Yeah.
I look a little scared. And they had the brake on his side,
they had the brake on his side, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, then like one time we called up and ordered like a cab and watched the cab drive. Because they didn't have any call waiting or caller ID.
Right, so it was just...
Like a rotary phone.
That's hysterical. Oh, my God.
I'm watching you. Now it's a felony.
Now-
if you threaten somebody over the phone, it's a felony. Yeah.
Michelle, I just want to say, you've done the show at the bookstore a bunch. You're
That's a fun
time. Hilarious comedian, so funny. And we go back. We go back to pre-COVID days at the Climate Lounge we used to host together.
Yep. Yeah.
That was a great time. I don't think... Are they still doing comedy in that room?
Yeah.
Oh, they are?
There's people every once in a while. You see shows.
Oh, yeah. But they changed the name. Is it not Climate? I think it's Cellar 77 now
or something like that.
Yeah.
Or Whiskey Cellar. Something like that. But, yeah, they have shows there.
Oh, my God.
And then, but, you know, he wants you to get people in there.
Right, yeah.
And I was watching, like, I saw one of the shows, and there was, like, a lot of comics on. Not, I didn't recognize it. A lot of comics on it. You know... I mean, he's a businessman, that guy. He wants money.
Right, it's we knew that firsthand from when our time there.
Yeah.
So Michelle,
I used to feel bad for like the comics that you could tell were working like jobs, and they would come in and you could just tell they had a rough day, and I'd always like one of them came in with a Pepsi. I'm like, dude, if you come in, you have to bring Coke. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm not
gonna
make him pay. Fuck. Yeah.
That was a whirlwind. Now, when we met, Michelle, how long were you doing comedy for at that point? Because I think we first met when I was starting out there.
I think I must have been doing like 10 years.
10 years
11
at that point.
Years, something like that. Yeah.
And now what were some of the first rooms like you came up in?
When I first started, and actually this comic just passed away tragically last week. Her name was Lisa Harmon.
Oh, jeez.
Her husband rode a motorcycle. I believe it was a motorcycle accident. She used to do the Broadway Comedy Club. There used to be a mic called Performance Anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be like Saturdays and Sundays at like 5, I think Sundays at 5 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to do that all the time. And then I remember I used to do Laughing Buddha when they first started, but then they started to take preference if you took the classes.
Oh.
I wasn't making the list, and I was like, and I would be going there constantly. So then I started going to this place off of, I think it's off 2nd Avenue, Bar 82. It's a Ukrainian building now.
Yeah.
And this guy, Tino, ran the mic there, and it was like the best, the coolest place because the back had couches, it had a stage. You know, there was a bar back there and everything. Not like no liquor was back there, but it, and it was just like if you took a DNA light, you'd be like, ugh, luminal. But it was like the best time, and like all comics stopped there. You know, Chris DiStefano would stop there, Emma Willman would stop there. And then you just go from different mic to mic
to mic.
Right,
and you would go around.
Yeah. So then we'd be one like on 14th Street. We'd go to like three or four mics a day, you know?
Yeah, no, of course.
Then there would be one at New York Comedy Club, and we'd go up to that one, like that was on a Monday. Then another friend of mine would run a mic, casual sketch at Identity Bar. It looked like a rape basement.
So I'm so curious, Michelle, because I know you were a police officer right before you retired.
Mm-hmm.
Were you doing stand-up while you were a police officer?
No.
Was it something you had always wanted to do?
No,
or?
After I retired, I went to a local comedy show. It was like a fundraiser.
Oh, get out,
and
okay.
And they picked whoever the fundraiser had picked the comics. So I was like, all right, I'm going to see if I could try that. So I went home and I Googled like stand-up comedy, and stand-up university came in the brokerage.
Yeah.
So I signed up for the class, and then, you know, and they teach you, like, you know, how to at least be likable.
Right.
And like, just, like, get 5 minutes, you know, and how to write a joke and stuff. And there was, like, a lot of cool people that took that class, like, that I remember that would, like, one time this improv group took the class. This guy Ben was hysterical. So I was just thinking about it at the graduation class. It's like, this is Barney Rubble. Bruno Burger's clothes. It was so funny. And then like one of the comics there took me under his wing, and you know, and he the first thing he said is, "No comedy club in the world's looking for comics."
That was
16 years ago.
What a great piece of advice.
No, and he was right, though. He goes, don't get caught up in doing all these bringer shows, because all that does is, you know, the minute you stop doing them, they're not going to book you.
Right.
And I never did a bringer show or anything. And then, but yeah, that was his big thing. And then, so I just would do open mics and get put on, like bar shows.
Sure. Shows in bookstores. And
yeah. That's when the Grizzly Pear, they only had one location.
Right. And that was downtown.
Yeah,
right?
It was downtown right next to the Comedy Cellar. And like, you know, you'd do a show and they'd pack people in, and then like one of the comics would be so offensive that they'd walk half the crowd.
Oh, no.
I hated when that guy did that.
That is, now have you noticed now, because you've been doing it now over 10 years and stuff?
Like 16 years,
16
I think,
years
yeah.
about. Has there been a shift in, like, because I just feel like there are so many, like, asshole comics like that we've talked about before. Obviously, it's still prevalent and stuff, but was it, I imagine it must have been more difficult to deal with maybe 16 years ago than now, would you say? Or is it still very prevalent?
The people that you don't want, the people that you hang out with are the people you aspire to be.
I love that. Yeah. Wow.
So you kind of have to, like, you know, like, if you I remember, like, at one point I was like, oh, I'm doing 3 mics. 6 days a week, and my mentor says, you'll start to develop bad open mic habits.
Mm.
So try to be very cognizant. Like when you go up there, you know, when you go to a show, don't do the same things. You know what I mean? Don't be so lackadaisical, maybe, or whatever. But like there was, you know, like there were people that, like, you would just sit through those mics and they were brutal.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, but hey, they'd be trying, you know. And
was it ever, now going back to your time on the police force, were you always funny on the police force? Did you take any of like the humor culture that was on the police force? Did you take that with you into comedy at all?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Cause you pick it up.
Sure. I imagine there's must be very funny just to like,
I mean, it was because they were with these guys for like, you know, 8 hours and even more sometimes 5 days a week, sometimes six.
Sure.
And so, you know, like this one guy, he would go to start doing his bills before we'd go out and do enforcement, and he'd get, you know. And then one time, he took the little radio transmitter and he threw it, and so the other detective's like, "That's smart. Break your only line." And so then this guy DJ, he dumped the garbage pail on Tony.
Oh my God. And was it hard for you? Because I imagine, and please tell me if I'm wrong about any of this, but I imagine that the police force probably must have like a male-dominated alpha type culture to it. Was that hard when you started working there as a woman?
Well, you know, I mean, it was, I went on like in 1989, and there were, like, I remember, like, the first female chief was like in 1993 or something.
Wow, okay.
And forget about like Nassau, Suffolk.
Right, I mean, right. You were in the city, right?
Yeah, yeah. But like those guys, because I had taken the Nassau test, and the guy said, I went back, you know, because I saw all these people getting called, and I had gotten a 98 on the test, and maybe they changed my grade because they were going to curve the grades, and I called them up, and they go, no, you come on down. You have a pick of any department. Like, you can have a village, you know. But it was different than, like, you know, there was no females in Nassau. I'm not going to be a pioneer, you know. Because on City Island in the Bronx, they had the fire department there, because there's only one way in and one way out.
Right.
And they would put a female firefighter there. Like, the first, they put them in slow houses.
Wow.
Because they didn't want to put them, you know, so I'm like, the guys in the Throgsnack firehouse, they were nice guys. But, like, the chief was saying, some of these people were ruthless. Like, you know, they put the locker up on the... We did that once, too. We put somebody's locker up on the roof, and the lieutenant... The guy was a dick, too.
Right.
You know? And the lieutenant was like, whoa, made a big deal about it. Like, well, relax.
So you took that position just to feel, like, more comfortable because there were other women working there in that precinct?
What do you mean, position?
Like, in other words, so because you said you could have had the pick of the litter, right?
I didn't take the Nassau test. I stayed in the city.
Oh, sorry.
Like, there were guys that were lieutenants, like city lieutenants. Yeah. They would, you know, but then at the time, you had to be in the state pension for 20 years, and I didn't want to be on patrol for 20 years.
Right.
Over 20 years. Yeah. I would have been over, because I already had 5 years on.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, and I didn't want to, you know, but some of these guys, this guy's a lieutenant, you know. He probably, the highest, you know, Nassau and Suffolk, the highest paid police departments in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You take a pay cut in the beginning, but, you know.
Right, but then eventually, yeah.
And I mean, it's a totally different world.
What was, I guess, because I'm just so curious to hear, because my father-in-law is also a cop, and he's working on a book actually now about, like, all of these different stories and stuff he's collected during his time on the force. And was there any point, I mean, what are there any stories or anything like that? Like, I don't want to be like so boring. Like, what's the craziest thing that's happened to you in the police force? But like, I'm so curious too, just as far as like your experience as a woman and at that time on the police force. Like, what I imagine it must have been incredibly difficult at points.
Actually, I was in the 90s, so everything was like, don't ask, don't tell. I never had a problem.
Wow.
None of those guys ever, you know, never on my face anyway. Made any comments or anything like that. Even in I worked in narcotics. Everybody was...
Wow.
You know, I mean, they were cool. Like, you know, I used to be in the car with some of these guys and their girlfriends would call. And then, you know, and like the wife would be like, who are you on the phone with? You know, and I'm, you know, you can pick up Spanish very easily. It was like a novella sometimes sitting in the car there. But... You know, so you can't, but you know, you had to like prove yourself too to a certain degree.
Sure.
You know, because there were people that didn't put their hands on anybody. Like, so if you were locking somebody up and they, you know, and something happened, they were like off somewhere. You were like, whoa, you know.
Right.
You're not helping us out here. Yeah. You know, stuff like that. There was always people like that, a little shaky.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course. And were you out at the time in the police force? Or
yeah.
No? You were? Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And it seems like that don't ask, don't tell would have also, it seems like, just because for me, right, because I've never been a cop, I don't really know anybody on the police force and stuff. So in my mind, it's this, you know, something I'm not used to in terms of like this rugged and, you know, tough mentality. But it seems like, at least in your case, did you find community on the police force with the guys or
yeah,
other female
I mean,
officers?
You know, the thing too is that, you know, when you go in there, you know, that right away you're told that nobody else likes you anymore. Nobody likes the police.
Right, yeah.
So you're driven, that mentality is driven into your head so that, you know, And who else has off the same time you do?
Right.
You know? Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And, right. And you know, and then next week it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You know? So it was never really, I mean, there was like, there was people that were like real idiots that gave us a hard time, that gave me a hard time. I'll never forget. And, but you know, and then I remember we would get, me and my partner got blamed for something that we didn't do, but I honestly take credit for it because it was a pretty good joke that they played. They put, this sergeant came in and he was like very meticulous and stuff.
Sure.
And, he had this big gap between his teeth. And we used to say, like, he probably uses rope for dental floss, you know, because we're so compassionate. And he was going to a meeting at the borough. And so he came in and he was wearing his khakis and his white shirt and a tie. And he put his dark blue jacket in the back. And, you know, he liked to brag that he dressed better than, you know, the regular cop that sure. went to, like, still had the same suit that they graduated in. And so, he goes to open his desk and he can't open it. And he goes like this and he's fixing the bottom. And he like throws his hands up in disgust and goes like this. And they put fingerprint ink on the bottom. He thought it was me and my partner, but it wasn't. And he kicked us out of the anti-crime room and everything. We had to go up to the CPOP office and shit.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And we didn't even do it, you know? Yeah, we didn't even do it. But you just took it, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so funny. And now, so... have you brought a lot of what you've learned or a lot of that experience on the police force into your act in terms of stand-up?
Some of it, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, some of it.
Yeah.
You know, I probably could write a lot more if I dig a little bit deeper.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
But yeah, and I mean, and everything like that I learned there became resourceful later on.
Sure,
know? So like,
yeah.
Anything that I do, it's like, wait a minute, I could think this through, you know, like, as opposed to, you know, because I had a sergeant that would, you'd ask a question and they'd say, you're a detective in the New York City Police Department, figure it out, which is a good, you know, good rule of thumb, but that you can't say that to everybody.
Right,
you know?
Right, yeah.
He said, figure it out, you know, I figured out how to shoot him, something like that, you know. So it's kind of like, I understand what your point is, but in all reality, do you really want to be the one responsible saying stuff like that?
Yeah,
you know?
I get that, though, too, and especially in terms of how that'd be useful for stand-up, because it is very much like, all right, go figure it out, right? Figure out where are the good places to go up, figure out what's the best way to go about it.
Yeah.
It's very, so it's interesting you kind of took on that agency.
And, like, I remember it was a Sunday, and I had to call up, Manhattan South. And make a notification, Manhattan South Homicide. And this other detective that I was friends with, she was a first grade detective. I go, what are you doing working on a Sunday? And she goes, hey, people get killed on Sundays just because I'm a first grade, you know. And like there was a guy that I work with on my team, and he had like the most time out of everybody. And whenever we had to put on our uniforms and go to like some bullshit detail,
sure.
he never complained.
Yeah.
And he had the most time. He could have gotten out of every single one of them, but he didn't. You know, so people like that, you're kind of like, you know, hey, that's how you should be, you know?
Yeah.
You have to be a team player.
Absolutely. And not to bring everything back to stand-up, but just because that's the world you and I share, that's a really, I see a lot of that with the veteran stand-ups who are, you know, they're, talk about people that you hang around, that you admire, right? Like all the comics that I admire and stuff, they're always so polite, doesn't matter how many years in they are, and they just, you know, They're professionals. They do, yeah.
I mean, I've never had, like, especially with, like, you know, I've seen, like, Chris DiStefano, I've gone in the green room. You know, he's like, I just want to put my bag in here. Get a water. He's like, oh, no, no problem, no problem.
Yeah, no,
you know,
it's, yeah.
I'll be out of your hair.
I know, and that's so...
And they're, you know, and they're always really nice.
Yeah,
you
that's
know?
The... Right, and... I've always said, too, it's like, because, I mean, they get it. No matter what level you're at, you know, it's this incredibly difficult thing that we try and do. And
yeah, I think for the most part they do. And they, you know, they remember that. And, you know, you got to remember these guys are like working. They're working because they have to hustle. That's how they make their money.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they can't really sit back on their laurels and say, oh, you know, I'll do a show next week or whatever.
Right, exactly. Right.
You know, and then, I think a lot of comics don't realize that.
Yeah, that's especially... now in terms of, you know, I think the difficult thing, it's hard, right? Because I've talked to a lot of comics, and the good thing is that now you have more agency than ever in terms of what you put out and stuff
that.
But the con to that is a lot of stuff like can take away from that grind of going out and doing it every night and stuff, because you have to, you know, make stuff online and so it's kind of the give and take, but you know, just something we do, something we
persevere through. And sometimes too, a lot of these guys, like, you know, you might do a sketch and, you know, you blow up on Instagram or TikTok or whatever, YouTube, but then it doesn't resonate when you go to a show and all these people come to see you, and you know, you got to do something.
Right. And that's the thing. That's why it's still so important to, you know, get your reps in and put the time in. And absolutely. What was, so I'm so curious too, has anyone that you used to be on the police force with seen your stand up?
Oh, actually, yeah. I did a show last year out on Long Island in Ohika Castle.
Ohika Castle. Yes. Oh, yeah.
And I did a show, and this guy comes up to me, goes, "You remember me? Do you remember who I am?" And I looked, and he had the bluest eyes, and I'm like, "Oh my God, Tony!" And it was this guy, Tony O'Neill. He was in my field training class.
Wow.
And I was like, you know, I always think of you, because he would always like, he used to be a mechanic before he came on the job, so he'd always say like, you know, yeah, no, you just got to put oil, I'll give you little tips. But he was always the nicest guy, really nice looking guy and everything. Yeah. He did. And I'm trying to, one time my sergeant came in, one of my sergeants came and saw me a few years ago, years and years ago. I'm sure, yeah.
Did you know they were coming beforehand, or was it always like you saw them after?
No, Tony, he just was part of the fundraiser that was going on. And then the other guy, he must have saw my name on the flyer.
Oh, get out.
Yeah.
Wow, so he came through.
And he came down. He was a nice guy. He came down and he saw, he was funny. It was a long time ago, too.
Sure,
I forgot all about
it. Do you, because I always get nervous when I perform in front of people I know.
Yeah, I don't like that either.
No, I was just talking with another comedian. We were saying we'd rather bomb in front of 500 people than to bomb in front of like 3 family members.
Yeah.
I just performed at Rodney's this past weekend, and like my family came.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God it went well, because it's like, you know, especially my parents. It's, you know, because there's something about just when your parents watch you, because it's like, all right, let's see what you're putting all this time into.
Yeah.
Know, so that was always, that always rattled me. But
yeah, no, I know. I don't like to know when people are coming.
Oh, me neither. And then also too, I get it. I'm sure maybe you get it as well, but like comics you admire, like when you watch my set, or like when some other people that, you know, I really admire.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And it goes poorly, I want to like shrink into
the
bathroom.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's just something, but.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. Yeah. Yeah.
So Michelle, I wanted to get to our low point today, which we had talked a little bit about before. You wanted to talk about when you were drinking.
Oh, that was a low point.
It was. Would you use the word alcoholic at all? Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, so
there ain't no other word for it.
Can you take us? Can you tell us about, you know, what was this time in your life? How much were you drinking?
I mean, I was probably, I always, like, you know, when I was in high school, and I didn't go to a party school in college. I went to the School of Visual Arts in Manhattan. So there was no, you didn't go to a bar or anything and hang out. But, you know, on the weekends, we'd go out, have some fun, whatever. But, you know, it was when I became a cop, because you hang out, you know, you hang out after work.
Yeah.
And then, you know, say you work in a day tour, 8 to 4. You all go out at 4 o'clock. I'm only going to have a few. I'm going to leave by 8.
Right.
I'm going to wait till the traffic clears up. Then 8 becomes 9, and then all of a sudden it's 12, and then it's 1 o'clock in the morning, and then, you know, I gotta go to work tomorrow.
Right.
And so it would start like little cycles like that, and then I think it like probably just accelerated even more, like right after my father passed away, because it was almost like it was an excuse.
Oh, well, when did he pass away? How old were you?
I think I was 30. I was 30.
Okay. Were you guys close?
I mean, you know, you know, he was a good dad and everything like that. So I think that's when it started to like really, you know, and then you start to see like, wait a minute, everything else is going, you know, forward, and I'm not.
How so? What do you mean?
Like, in other words, like you know, life's just passing you by because you don't, now you don't want to get, like, it would progress to the point where, well, now you don't want to get caught drinking and driving, so I'm not going to go out. I'll just stay home. Mm-hmm. You know, like that kind of stuff.
And you would drink at home.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd get up, pass out, start it all over again. Yeah, it was bad.
And when, so you had started drinking when you were in high school?
Well, like, it wasn't that bad in high school, but, like, you know, I had gotten drunk once or twice. You know, maybe in college I got sick once or twice. I think once, you know, drunk a few times, you know, nothing like, it wasn't every weekend, you know. And I remember, like, the big joke used to be, like, oh, it was Thursday. Oh, I've been drinking since Thursday. You know, because it was Sunday night and you went out to this, there was a bar that was open on a Sunday night, a dance. You go out there.
Right,
you know, you're like, oh, I've been drinking since Thursday.
Yeah.
But then you didn't drink Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, you know?
Was it a lot of, like, binging on alcohol, too? Like, just, or, like, in other words, was it more like you found yourself to constantly, you know, just need a drink or to be drunk? Or was it like, you know, you'd go out, like, on that Thursday night and just have a
ton of alcohol? Forget it. Yeah. And like, I can remember they would have these, like, 10-13 parties. There'd be, like, if a cop got cancer, they'd have a 10-13 party for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so this one was in Gaelic Park in the Bronx. And Gaelic Park is just a big, giant Gaelic football field.
Okay.
And it has, like, a clubhouse that has a bar in it. And I remember it was, like, a day like this, like, really hot.
Yeah.
And, you know, 4 o'clock, there we are, and you're drinking beer, because you got beer tickets, and you're drinking beer, and I was just,
right.
And I mean, with the heat and everything, and then just, you know, I think I slept at a friend of mine's house, and the next day you got to get up, and you got to get
right.
the car, and you got to go home, and your day's all wasted.
Right, and then, yeah, the next
yeah.
is completely shot.
Yeah, yeah.
And I imagine it's probably the culture, too, on the force, too, where everyone's just...
Yeah, I mean, I hung out with the people that drank.
Right, right.
You know, towards the end, I hung out with the people who didn't drink. But, you know, yeah, I gravitated towards the ones who, you know, I remember one time it was JFK Jr.'s funeral. And the Kennedys wanted to walk up Fifth Avenue from St. Patrick's to the Irish Heritage Club on Fifth Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, so we had to be downtown at like 5 o'clock in the morning. And... So the sergeant's like, we're all, no overtime. We all go home at 4 o'clock today.
Okay.
And we didn't go home. We went drinking.
Right.
And
right.
I went drinking and drinking and drinking and drinking and drinking. And then I slept over at my friend's house. And I woke up and like Regis and Kathy Lee was on. It was 9 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, no.
So I called up my sergeant and I go, listen, I got a flat on my way in. And he goes, okay, just make it down here when you can. So I slithered into the precinct and I put my uniform on and I drive downtown and like every cop's like, oh, you were the cop that was late. You were the cop that was late, you know? And then I remember watching the Kennedys walk, but they made us go and it was just like so like, oh. And you know.
And you were hungover too, right?
Yeah,
like, oh.
And this
God.
One kid, I don't know how he did it, man. He used to get really hungover. I'm like, how can he be here? Like, we had the other team, the other 4-6 team in narcotics, they drank. They were heavy hitters.
Right.
And I remember we hung out, and it used to, the building used to be in Co-op City in the Bronx. There's no bars in Co-op City,
okay.
And there's no place in Co-op City at the time that sold alcohol. So if you wanted to get a case of beer, you had to go over to Westchester Square or the 4-7 if you, you know, want to get shot. So... they'd have the case of beers, and these guys drinking, and we were like, shh, shh. And then I remember, they're like, oh, shit, it's 5 o'clock. We got to go to the Puerto Rican Day Parade today. And they just, like,
wow.
went in, took shit, and I'm like, oh, my God. They were, like, professional. Yeah.
That is, oh, my God. And then they would work the parade.
And then, like, I remember going to, like Rory Dolan's, and I'd say, I want a Guinness, and the guy would say, a pint or a glass, and me and my partner would just look at each other like, a pint? Yeah.
So you started drinking on the force, probably around like 30, you would say?
Yeah, a little bit under 30, yeah.
Okay. I guess how long did it take for you to realize that it was like, oh, this is a problem?
I would say like maybe a good 3 years, like then, but then it like just really progressed.
Real okay.
Yeah, because that's what happens. It just progresses.
Right, as you just keep doing
it.
Yeah, you
just doing it. And then that's when you start to become like isolated and shit, you know?
Yeah.
Let me see what time the liquor store opens up. The one on Broadway opens at 9. And at the time, the liquor stores were closed on Saturday, on Sundays. And you couldn't buy beer till 12 o'clock on Sundays.
Yeah.
So I don't know how it's if it's like that now, but I remember, like, you know, you were just itching until 12 o'clock.
Because
the night before, you know, I'm like, oh, I'll save two of them. No, I'm not saving two of them.
Right,
I was
right.
like an animal, you know? So, nothing good came of that.
Right.
Nothing good.
Were there any, like, and we can cut anything you want to as well, but, like, were there any, like...
Car accidents?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
It was just
property
damage only.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
fucking
my God.
Those lights on the Throgs Neck Bridge, those arrows, huge.
Oh, my word. Yeah. So did you, oh, my God. So you were drinking like that for about 3 years, right?
I would say, yeah.
And I guess, like, when you look back and you think about, like, because, you know, my vice is weed now. And it's like, to be honest, I'm at a point where I never sleep better. Because I think you dabble a little bit, too.
Of course, I dabble every day.
Yeah, every day.
I dabbled in Michigan, too. They have amazing weed.
Michigan?
No, I do. My cousins always say, did you stop at the dispensary yet?
Oh, nice.
And I go and you phone it in. And, you know, years ago when I went there, I remember I was at a CrossFit gym. And I kept smelling weed. And the guy goes, no, they grow it right there. Like, they grow in Michigan. Like, they have the growing facilities right there. It's not like upstate New York.
Right, or like here where they just,
they grow it.
Yeah.
So everything there is grown. And so, like, you know, I remember when I would first go, you'd Google every strand to see which one's going to get you high the most. And then, but now, you know what? Like, I just got to go in there and I get, like, whatever, like, their special is.
Yeah, right.
You know?
You do the gummies or do you smoke it?
So I do gummies, like, at night. I'll do gummies or, like, if it's going to be a long day, like, if, you know, you're driving to Michigan or something, you know?
Yeah.
I remember I had hip surgery and my buddy Fat Jay gave me gummies. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, yeah, they usually just 10 mil. Okay, I just take. And I took the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
And so my sister was coughing, you know, and I said, I have a humidifier for you. And it took me like an hour to try to figure out because I was just laughing.
Oh, my God. That's the when you have a task. That's always tough.
And she was just looking at me like, you degenerate.
Oh, my
you.
God.
Yeah.
But like when I think about, like, because I do it every night now. And it's like, you know, but one, I've never slept better on it. And I understand, like, weed's a little bit different than alcohol and stuff, but, like, if you were to think about, like, because I used to drink really, really heavily in college and stuff like that, and it's, you know, and I would go out, I've had, you know, got kicked out of pool parties in Vegas and stuff for stuff, and, like, I think back to it, and, like, for me, I was always, like, I think the reason I was drinking was, like, I was, you know, not dealing with certain things going on inside.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, like, would you say that was the case as well?
Yeah, I mean, it starts out as fun.
Right.
And
that's
then the next thing you know, it's like, well, I'm going to have some fun. If I drink, I have fun. And then, you know, but then it's like, you know, like, little by little, my bar would get lower. Like, I'll never drink before noon. You know, I'll never drink at 10 in the morning. And then,
right,
you know.
Yeah.
But, like, for me, that's what happened. You know, it starts out as fun.
Yeah.
And it's harmless fun, and then, you know, the next night you do the same thing, and then the next, and then it becomes a cycle.
Right, and
know?
Then it's, yeah.
I mean, for me, it did. For a lot of people, it probably doesn't.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I guess, and I'm curious, too, because, like, what was your, like, when you were in school or anything like that, what was the education like about drugs and alcohol for you? Because for us, it was very much like we had ex-addicts coming in and talking about, like, their experiences and stuff. What was it like for you?
I don't think that anybody come in.
No, nobody came in? Yeah.
Dare started, like, I graduated high school in, like, 83.
Okay.
So, you know, MTV just started the day that I started my senior year in high school.
Oh, really?
Yeah, with Video Killed the Radio Star. Started that summer.
Uh-huh.
And so, then there became the big push, because now, like, that's when crack started to come around.
Okay.
And also in the 80s, Coke was really big and everything.
Yep.
So, I mean, I was in high school. I couldn't get my hands on Coke. You know, like, you think that's, like, so adult. But we had weed and stuff. But, you know, I'm sure they probably mentioned it, but nobody.
Right.
No, it wasn't like it is now. But, I mean, now it's just, it's crazy.
But you know what's interesting now is, like, I feel like with Gen Z, I keep hearing all these stories about how, like, they're all sober now. Like, drinking is way, way down.
Yeah.
Which I think is so interesting because, like, for me, I think movies, TVs, everything was go out, especially like when I was in high school and college.
Yeah.
It was like you go to college, you get drunk every
that's
night.
What you do. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like that's what you do. And now it's like
they live a life.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, I know.
I heard too that it's like we're going to look back on drinking in like 10 or 20 years, how we look at smoking now.
Oh,
which I thought was interesting.
It's ironic too because this was like a few years ago, I had gotten one of those dry herb vaporizers.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And so I was doing something and I slid up my back door and it wasn't even summer out and my neighbor must have smelled it. It doesn't burn it. Like it's not constantly smoking.
Right.
So he made a comment, whatever. I just ignored it. And then last year it was really hot out. And I remember I walked the dog. I came back and she was running around, you know, and I had the door open. And somebody was smoking weed, but it wasn't me. And he blamed me.
Oh.
And he yelled and he goes, I know it's her. And I could hear his wife going, shh. And I'm like, you know, what a dick, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we put a Ring camera facing that way, make sure that he's not out on his deck, right?
Right, right.
And this year, July 5th, it's about 12:30, 1 o'clock, and I'm watching TV. And I had just, I had all the windows closed and the AC on because they still had fireworks. I didn't want the dog to get scared.
Sure, sure.
And my neighbor's out on his deck and he has a very deep voice and he's like, oh, I hear him out there. And, you know, he's probably having a few beers. Like the day that he yelled about that last summer, he was out there drinking a few beers, you know, because mm-hmm. you could just tell he's like slurring and stuff. And he's talking louder. Now it's 1 o'clock in the morning. But it's a Saturday, it's a summer, it's the day after July 4th, you know. And then the next thing you know, it's like 1:45, and he must have brought like the Bluetooth speaker out, and he starts singing at the top of his lungs. And he's like, singing and everything. And I just sat there like, holy fucking shit, you know? And like, that's what I laugh. It's all these people that they look down on people who smoke weed.
Yeah.
But it's like, bro, I'm up before you. I probably worked out already, took a walk. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And smoked a joint with my second cup of coffee. And within 2 hours, you know, you're always like pretty much normal.
Right. Yeah.
It's not like, you know, you smoke something, you maintain it, you know, whatever. But like that, you just get sick.
Totally. And, you know, I feel that way because like sometimes I do the drink nowadays. Have you heard of that?
No.
It's like a shot. You just do that. You can mix it in a cocktail. Oh, it's really nice. I'll show you. I'll send you a picture of a bottle when I get home. It's great. I love it. And sometimes I'll take it. I'm like, you know what? Let me go for a run. Like, you know what I mean? It's like you feel it's not as destructive as alcohol
is.
No.
And also, too, it's like, you know, the way, you know, botanists do this and chemists. Mm. You know, it's not the high school kid
right.
in the backyard, you know, spraying something on it to make it taste grapey,
right.
You know? And I remember, like, when I first would do that, like, I would always, like, look up the strains and everything. And now, you know, Fat Jay, he just gives me whatever. And it's like, I like that better. He takes the pressure off.
Yeah, you just, yeah.
And so
someone you trust,
And it was nice because, like, when I went to Michigan, it's like, you know, yeah, you see this, you see that, the Tyson and all this. And it's like, I'm just getting their stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I hear you.
It's well worth the trip.
When did you first start smoking weed?
Like about... I'm going to say like 10 years ago.
10 years ago? Okay. So I was curious if you had done it around the time you were drinking or anything like
Mm-mm.
that. So it wasn't even on the table.
Drug tested.
Oh, that's right. That's how much the culture has changed, right? Because it's like when I was first coming out of college, like they would drug test for stuff like that too. Now it's like nobody.
Yeah. They drug test you. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So you didn't even like touch it. Didn't even think about it till.
Nope. And then like one time I was in narcotics and I remember the gloves that my mom got me my own box of gloves because the gloves in the police, the hands were too big. So she would go to like the beauty supply place and get me the ones that the hairdressers use.
Okay.
So if I had to fingerprint somebody.
Gotcha.
And I remember a little bit got of, I think it was heroin got on my, finger or something like that. So you had mm-hmm. to call up and get like an exposure number. Mm-hmm. So that this way, if you got drug tested, you already, you know, now if you got too many exposure numbers, then they would kind of look at you like, dude, what are you doing?
Mm.
You know, are you sniffing it? You know?
Right.
So sometimes if you might be in a precarious situation, you had to do what you had to do, you did what you had to do, and then you get that control number, and then you go to the hospital.
Right. Okay. Was there? Did you see a lot of like a lot of that where people in the force would like, you know, I guess like was it you're around those drugs so much, would people?
We had a guy that was just stealing money from cops.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. How was he doing it?
I guess they were leaving stuff around, and they kind of surmised it was him. And so the sergeant goes, all right, I'll take care of it. And he called up IAB, and IAB came, and they set up, like, the most obvious thing. They two guys in a car, and they had a suitcase in the back, and it was opened, and there was money in it. And he went for it, the stupid ass.
Oh.
They used to do the thing. Like, one time, me and this guy, Mike, we had a confidential informant, and we were going to go get a warrant, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we drive the van down to Bronx Criminal Court, and we put the parking plate in the window, the pool plate, and we go in and whatever, right? And we get the warrant. We're going to go back to the base. And we're looking all over for the pool plate. We can't find the pool plate. And that was like a big thing. If you lost it, that mm-hmm. it was the lieutenant. So if you lost it, you were like really screwed. We're looking all over, right? So I said, let's just get out of the front of the courthouse. And we went to like an abandoned lot. And we just tore that car apart.
Sure.
We took the panels and everything. We couldn't find it, you know. But we tore everything apart. We like moving. We used to tape up if there was openings so they couldn't slip drugs. We looked everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We lifted up like the little floorboard thing everywhere. We're like, I said, you know what, Mike? Let's go get a baseball bat and I'll bash the window. We'll see somebody busted the fucking window and stole it. And he goes, you sure? And I go, yeah, we'll just go to Throg's Neck, a little league. So we're on our way to Throg's Neck, and we're sitting on the Cross Bronx, and I look, and I see a little piece of plastic, and what happened was the pool plate fell behind.
Oh, my God.
It was a big cargo van, so it had one of those big, like, rounded, like, soda container or cup holder things.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get back to the base, and we're laughing, like, imagine, right? And so the next thing you know is the lieutenant calls us in, and he's like, yeah, IAB, and these two IAB, and they found these drugs in the car. In the van.
Uh-huh.
And Mike and I go, absolutely not.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely not. You put them there. And they go, because we were going to be assigned the prisoner van for the night. That's why we took it to court.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because if we were late, we'd meet them out in the field, you know?
Okay.
So they're like, yeah, it was, we found this. No, you didn't. And we told Lieutenant Hickey the story. We told him the entire story. I said, dude, I was going to go get a baseball bat. I searched that car so much. You should see it. We vacuumed it. We brought it to the court. We vacuumed it, trying to look for the pool plate, figuring like it was plastic. It was like this big. The suction of the vacuum would get it. We vacuumed the whole fucking thing out, and these guys are trying to say,
Oh my God.
Go get the fuck out of here. No way.
Well,
no way.
I guess like what they just like didn't like you.
No,
or
they
like...
would do stings like that.
Oh, they
to
would
make
do.
Sure
oh, I see.
You searched the car. You were supposed to search the car before you got in there.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
now.
And like
yeah.
one time, you know. They became a very big thing, like with the union, like, don't you ever throw a gun in the back? Because what if we don't search the car?
Right, and then it's, yeah.
Even if it's not loaded, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, my God. Wow.
So, yeah, they had to stop that, I think.
Thank you. The baseball bat thing kills me, too. Let's
that's smart thinking, right?
That's really smart.
Because it was half a perp. Fuck that.
Oh, my
Bronx
God.
Bronx Criminal Court.
Right.
You know they're going to bash something.
Oh, my God.
We parked it in the front. Yeah.
That's too funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Now, just to go back to the drinking. So when you were around 33, right, you said that's when it kind of, you thought, okay, this is a problem.
Yeah.
Were you able to, like, get a control on it, like, get a grip on it? What was, like, the moment that you were like, this is too much?
Oh, I think it was just, like, one day I just woke up and I was like, you know, this is ridiculous. I got to do something.
Yeah.
So I remember I looked up. I went to an AA meeting and or 12-step meeting. And then I went and I was like, all right, this seems to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
You
did
know?
You relate to a lot of, like, what they were talking about?
Yeah, like, you know, they were drinking a lot and everything. So I was like, okay, you know. And then I would go and I went to a 12-step program for like 18 years. And then it was about 10 years ago. And I remember my mother was sick. And I remember like, well, did you get to a meeting? Did I get to a fucking meeting? I have to work at Macy's. And then mm-hmm. I got to go home and take care of my, you know.
Right,
like,
right.
And they used to have, like, I just found that it could be very hypocritical.
The program?
Yeah.
Oh, how so?
Like, you know, you got to watch, you have to, like, you know, they would tell you this in the police department. Some of those people that you used to be friends with, you can't be friends with anymore, you know. But, like, with this, it was almost like, you know, your family won't understand and all that, you know, almost like that. You know, if you didn't do everything they told you, you go back to drinking again.
Right,
you know,
right, yeah,
and I remember I watched this documentary. I forget what the name of it was, and they had all these people that they just said, "I'm gonna not go anymore." And they went to there was like another program that they tried, you know, whatever. But I was like, you know, you used to get more aggravated sometimes going there.
Yeah, yeah, but I feel like was it at that point that you were like, I've gotten what I need from this program,
yeah.
And now, okay.
And, you know, and it was just like, it was becoming a chore.
Yeah.
Like, you have to go, you know.
Yeah.
Like, so then my anxiety, we would be through the roof.
Right, and then you would be, right, because in the back, right. And, you know, it's funny, it's like, because I know we're both diehard Yankee fans, so, like, it always, in my mind, it's always a sign when those things become a chore.
Yeah.
Right, when things start to feel like a job. Like, Jeter talks about, did you watch the Captain documentary about him?
No.
Great doc, if you check it out. But he said, like, right when he was towards the end of his career, he said baseball started to feel like a job.
Yeah.
And then he was like, I'm out at that point. So, like, you know, because it's no longer serving you at that point.
No,
right?
It's fun to, like, I get excited when I have to fill up a cone.
With the cone, yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
like
yeah.
It's like a little project.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, okay, do another one, you know, and it's like, okay, we got them all set, you know. It's like a little, it's like relaxing. And I remember I had rotator cuff surgery, and my friend had to go speak at a meeting mm-hmm. at South Oaks Hospital.
Sure.
And that's like the psychiatric hospital, and it's also a rehab. And so we had just gone to the pharmacist to pick up my prescription of oxycodone, and I wasn't even taking it.
Yeah.
So I had it in my pocket, and I remember, like, the lady said to me, she goes, when you share, because they needed two speakers, she goes, when you share, you know, make sure, you know, don't, like, a lot of them use drugs, so their triggers would be, like, the whole preparation thing. Like,
wow.
I was warming up the spoon, you know?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like a ritual.
Right. That's the, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, like, I would be saying something, and you'd see them being on the end, and I'm like, oh, I gotta take, you know, let's temper that down a little
bit. Right, sure, sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, you know, listen, I'm not saying that it's useless, but, you know, I think that everybody, and you used to always weird me out, too, like, there'd be these agnostic people. Well, then how do you surrender everything to a higher power if you're agnostic?
Sure, sure. Are you religious, Michelle?
I mean, I'm spiritual.
Spiritual, right, yeah.
I don't go to church anymore, but, like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, yeah.
What's up with that?
Right, and...
And that guy who wrote, you know, these guys, too, when they first started, it was a very, like, secluded group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bill W., when he started the whole thing, and he would bring drunks home and, you know, sober. His wife was probably, what the fuck? You know?
His wife's pissed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I forget what her name was. Bill and... I forget what her name was. But, like, she probably had to put up with a lot of shit.
Yeah.
You know?
I didn't even know it started.
And then, I used to go to Al-Anon because I was dating somebody that, you know, was in the program. So, like, go to Al-Anon, and then you're a double winner. But you used to sit there, and you'd hear all the Al-Anon people complaining about the alcoholics. And so, I didn't want to say anything. I was just like... And then you'd know some of their wives. Like, so now I know everything about this guy.
Right.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to sit in a meeting, like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, so it seems like at that point you had gotten what you needed from the program.
Yeah.
And then was it pretty much like you were able to kind of keep a lid on things?
Yeah, like I haven't had a drink in 23 years.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And it started back then, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for you, Michelle.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now it's probably just stubbornness.
The
because
reason
it
you
makes
don't drink
you gain or, weight and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, again, like we talk about, there's just so many negatives to it for...
And I used to, like, when I would train for marathons, I'm like, well, an 18-mile day, you know, of course I'm having a beer.
Sure.
You know, so all those calories that I burnt off, you just gain that excess,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's a big one.
And then you have to go to the bathroom a lot, too.
Yeah, that's the, yeah. Yeah. Wow, I didn't really realize you were sober for 23 years. That's incredible. What is it, because I hear a lot of people, for anyone listening that's like thinking about like sobriety in that way, I've heard it's just about making a decision like every day to just, like it's one day at a time.
Really. Like in the beginning, like, you know, towards the end, your body craves it. So you're like, you get like the shakes a little bit and stuff. And some people get really like bad, you know?
Yeah. Did you experience any of that? Or
I think I might have had the shakes. Like that's when I went. You know, I was like, oh, I can't do this.
Right.
So, but like some people, you know, they'll get them and then they'll still keep drinking and it just gets worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I got tired of feeling like garbage. I got tired of having to apologize. You know, why didn't I pick you up for the beach? I was too hungover or something like that.
Sure.
You know, things like that.
Did you ever, and I don't mean to pry and we can cut everything, but like, did it ever like, not picking someone up from the beach.
Yeah, Katie, that's why I babysit her kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't pick her up from the beach.
Oh, I didn't know it was Katie,
And like, you know, so like she'll call me and say, can you, and I remember one time I was coming home on the train and I go, remember when I didn't pick you up from the beach that time? You don't ask me. You say, Shell.
Yeah.
And I told her husband that and he's just like, what?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So 23 years sober. Mm-hmm. That's, yeah. And does it ever come back, that craving to have a drink? Or no, never anymore, right? Yeah.
It doesn't even taste good.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't. Like, I can go get a pina colada Slurpee at 7-Eleven.
There you go.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No,
because
that's,
you drink them, like if I had a drink like that, I would drink it too fast.
That's the thing. And, you know, it's so funny because my fiance loves a glass of wine every night. And like, you know, that's like her way
like
to come
sister.
Down. Yeah. And you know, it's like, she's like, do you ever want to just have a drink with me? And I'm always like, no, I just have no,
like you said, smoke my little weed.
That's exactly where I'm at. Cause you know, it relaxes me. And cause I feel like, I don't know if I'm speaking for it, but I feel like you and I share, like, you get anxious a lot, Michelle, because, you know, me, any comic,
I'm on,
I feel
200
like
200 milligrams of Zoloft.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's just like there's something about weed that just really, again, brings me down and I'm able to just be a little more present.
It focuses. And I'm also honest. Like when I had my hip surgery the first time, I remember he's like, I'll give you. And I said, listen, I smoke weed. I don't need any of that. And he's like, he goes, well, we have to give you something when you leave the hospital. We have to give you something for the pain. So here's a prescription, whether you use it. And I didn't use it. And this time, the same thing, you know. And I did have edibles this time because my sister was staying over. And I'm also like conscientious. Like, I don't want the house smelling like it.
Yeah. That's
so
the,
I have the corner in the window.
And it's better for your lungs, too.
Yeah.
It's like, you know.
I have a little window in the corner.
Oh, there you go.
You know. And I remember when she came in, I said, does it smell like weed? She goes, no, it doesn't. I'm like, that's because I constantly leave the windows open.
Yeah.
You know, but I, you know, even sometimes if you're on the beach, you know, it's not even worth the hassle. I'll take a walk and go walk.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that must be great on the beach.
Yeah,
but
you have to take a walk because people, you know, and like even I was sitting in the park before because I got a salad, so I had to eat something. And, like, this guy was smoking a joint. I didn't even smell him. I didn't smell it at all. But, like, there were kids around. And it is a park. And it was 6 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes, like, it's one thing if it's Washington Square Park. You just don't walk by the playground.
Right. That's interesting, too. It's like, and I feel like we're still learning that, like, as a society now. It's like, when is it acceptable to, like, do that kind of thing? Because to your point, it's like, I don't think everyone would have that thought to be like, oh, there are kids here, let me, you know, kind of take a walk.
Yeah.
Because Hoboken, like, reeks some blocks because we have dispensaries downtown and uptown.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes it just gets pretty bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, we,
I like they complain on Long Island, like, it smells like weed. Well, it's legal now.
Well,
bitch.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the bitch. Do you ever smoke and try to write while you're?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. How does it work for you? Does it work? Or?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it comes up, like, I'll come up with better punchlines and stuff. I mean, I'm not saying, like, I don't do it all the time, but I found that, like, sometimes, like, if I'm like, well, I'm not going to even try to write anything.
Yeah. If you can just, let's just do it and let's see what comes out, right?
And like, or like, if maybe if I have a premise or something, and then like I'll walk around or something, try to think of something. But yeah, I found that it does.
I agree.
It opens it up. Well, because it makes my mind focus more.
Yes, I completely agree with you. And it's very like, it takes the pressure off almost, right? Because we put so much pressure on ourselves. I got to write 3-4 new jokes today. Mm-hmm. When you're high, it's just like, let me just see what comes out and let's just have, it brings the fun back a
little bit.
Yeah,
it's more fun and it's more, you know, I mean, obviously, I remember going to Mike's and these guys must have been smoking something crazy because their punchline sucked, you know? But it's usually never anything like that. And then again, too, I'm not at the point where I'm like, you know,
right,
like a zombie.
Have you performed high ever or no?
No. I might have had on the way to a club or a show.
Sure, but not yet.
But not like right before, no.
Gotcha. You've never done like a high show or anything?
No, that would be fun to do.
Those are really fun. Yeah. My friend Steph Brown did one and I hosted.
Oh, that's cool.
It was very cool, but it was funny. You'll appreciate this because I had one killer line. I said someone wore a t-shirt. I said it makes me look like a bottom. Get crushed. Crushed in this room, Michelle. And then next thing later, I said something about the J train. Silence. I was all over the place
on the spectrum.
But no, they're very fun if you ever get a chance to do it.
I like when you see people and all of a sudden their edible kick in.
Yes. Oh, that's, when you can watch it happen in real time.
You're like, oh man, I just took an, that used to happen at Climate a lot.
I've never done stand-up high in that room. That would be a fun room to do it because it's a little like it's its own little world out there. That was where I did my first mic, was that Climate. Do you remember your first mic?
I did it at a place out on Long Island, I think. A tattoo place.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I was really nervous because there was this comedian that was like, pretty popular out on Long Island, and I was like so nervous. And then there was this other guy who was kind of like a dick. And then I remember Tim Dillon used to go there a lot.
Wow.
And I'm like, well, at least if he's there, like I know his face. Like he's a friendly face. The other two were kind of like,
right,
dismissive.
Right. Yeah.
And I remember, I don't know if he was there. He was at, I think he might have been there, but I remember I did my set and I was just like, and the other comics were laughing. And I'm like, well, that's a good sign. Because they tell you if the other comics are laughing, it's a good sign.
Yeah.
And I remember, too, like when you did the graduation class. And then the following week, you'd sit in the class and you'd watch your tape. And they'd say, try not to hold the mic cord. And they'd always say, remember that show that you did? You're not going to have another one like that for a long time. Sometimes you could see, like, if it's a newer comic and they get up and they don't get anything. And, like, I was in Atlantic City a few weeks ago, and it was a little rough. And it does throw you off when they don't laugh because you're like, what?
I did, oh, my God. So I, because there's a rhythm to it.
Yeah.
Right,
all right.
Yeah. And then it's like, because that just happened to me last week. I was running through the five. I was trying to get a tape for this weekend. So I was just running it. And I did a mic. I won't say where, but, like, I did it. And, like, there's a dead room and then there's a room where there's like the soul has been completely taken out.
You know what
I mean? Where nobody cares anymore.
Yeah.
And I had to stop and I had to like address the room because I was like, this is not helpful for anybody.
Not.
And it's, it was like, ugh.
That's
soul
why
crushing.
I do a lot of the online mics.
Do you like them? Like from the pandemic and stuff? That's interesting.
Because, at this stage of the game, I already know how to have a stage presence.
Exactly.
So, I wouldn't suggest it like for somebody who's new, but the good thing is that you could try all your stuff out.
Yeah.
And then also I met so many people online that don't live in New York that like when I go to I went to like North Carolina Comedy Festival last year and you meet them in person, it's like you knew them already.
That's awesome.
I'm going back this year and it's like, okay, why don't we get an Airbnb? Okay.
Yeah. And it's like because you already know them.
It's like, even like when you would just, when I would start to speak to them, it was just like you were talking like you've been in person with them forever.
Right.
I think they are. I mean, there can be some that are like, brutal, whatever. But I mean, honestly, I've had good experiences. And, the other thing, too, is like, you could turn your camera off and go get something to drink if you have to, or go to the bathroom.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Look at the Yankee game.
Right, exactly. Check the score quick and all that. Because we were talking, Michelle, like, because you're going to these comedy festivals, right? You're going to all these clubs and meeting all these different people. And you were sober, right, when you started.
Mm-hmm.
And comedy, is filled with the temptation to drink and smoke after shows and stuff. Was it difficult for you being sober and then entering that scene, or like, did you find that you were able to?
No, because I pretty much made it known that I didn't drink.
So you would, which is so, and that's the other thing too, with like pressure to drink and stuff when like you're going out. It's like, I always struggled with that too, where I was like, or I shouldn't say too, but I struggled where if I didn't want to drink, I would easily be overcome by people telling me drink, you know, because I couldn't stand up for myself.
No,
in that
I
moment,
couldn't either.
Yeah.
No,
so it's like, you know, it's just like, because I'm like a people pleaser, so I'm like, you know, but then it makes it worse because if you give in once, they're going to know, oh, he's not serious. You can just keep.
And the other thing, too, is it's nobody really notices what you're drinking half the time.
Exactly. Yes. That's another. Yeah. Did you ever count drinks on your arm? I've done that to like whatever.
I've lost count.
Yeah. That's the. Yeah. When I was trying to stop, I would be like, OK, let me on my arm here. Tally it up. So I was like, okay, once I reach 5, done. And I would wake up the next morning, my entire arm would be like.
We used to go when I was in narcotics, and we'd go across the street from this one particular precinct, and the owner would, and we'd go in the ice box, and we would just be drinking beers. And the cat, the bodega cat, would be walking around.
Oh my god.
And I remember one time the sergeant was like, "Where's so and so? They're playing ping pong downstairs." And then they come running across.
They're playing ping pong. That's hysterical. Michelle, we always try and end on if someone is in a position where they're trying to stop drinking, right? Like, what is the advice going through this experience that you would give them?
I would say go to a find a support group, like whether it's a 12-step group or it's slow down on alcohol group or something like that. But I would actually just go to a 12-step group.
Right.
And, you know, take it from there because it does give you, you know, what you need to start. And a lot of people, too, like, you know, there was always these people in AA, or in the 12-step groups, they would be the reason why they didn't go to NA is because when the former addicts would share, they would share about the preparation because that, you know, oh, I got the tinfoil, I opened it up, I lit the spoon.
Right.
You know, so they found it more tempting. Mm-hmm. Where when they would go to an AA meeting, you know, you weren't allowed to talk about drugs. That was like the big thing.
Oh, it was just strictly alcohol.
So they would talk about recovery.
Wow.
And so they would be able to say, okay, I can focus more on that.
Right.
So there would be a lot of people that, you know, and then there would be a whole big controversy. Like, should we say, you know, I mean, because times are changing too, mm-hmm. you know. I can understand it, you know, to a point, but like they'll even say, like, if you go to rehab, your chances aren't that good.
Wow.
They're horrible. They're like one in like three people. They used to say, if you look around the room, at least 5 of you will start drinking again.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Google it. It's any rehab will tell you that. There's no guarantee.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think now they have a pill or something like that.
Yeah, I have heard about that. Yes, I think because I think it just makes you sicker or something. So it's supposed to whatever. But did you ever go to rehab or no?
No, because I wanted my job. You know, I certainly wasn't good.
Yeah.
So like, if you got in trouble, you'd say, "Oh, I think I was drunk. I want to go to the farm," so you wouldn't get fired right away.
Right.
And you go to rehab, you know, and you'd go, and it was out in the Hamptons. It was like a nice one.
Okay.
And the guys, you know, you'd go out there, then you come back, and you wouldn't have your guns. So I just used to go on. I didn't say it. I just went on my own, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, because that was like the big stigma. Like, you didn't want your guns taken away. And then they did this thing, like, you know, like they made this. It's run by police officers now. It's like called PAPA, P-O-P-P-A, and it's like, so if you feel like you're gonna kill yourself and you don't want to call health services or like the department psychologist, you call them because they're cops.
Oh, and so
they won't rat on you.
Oh.
That was like the big stigma.
Well, that's smart, right? Because otherwise, what's the incentive for you to call? Because the only thing is...
You know they're going to take your guns.
Okay. Did you ever experience that, Michelle? Where you had those feelings?
One of my buddies did, though.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, yeah, he was hanging out, and his wife was getting pissed.
Oh, no.
Yeah. She was a cop, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And I believe she taught at the police academy. So she, you know, she had a very, like, she was home by like 5-6 o'clock at night. Maybe if they flip-flopped, like when I went to the academy, you did day tours and 4 to 12s.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, the classes after that, they just went during the day, you know, because I guess they weren't getting trained to, you know, what it's like to be at night.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, so she was, yeah. Okay. And then we had another guy. This guy was like, he was the precinct drunk. And I remember hanging out And I worked in the 4-5 precinct in Throgs Neck, and we were hanging out, and I was at the desk. I was answering the phones that day, and I had to wait for face-to-face relief. I couldn't, like, when all the other cops came in and they signed out, after roll call, those guys, the next tour would just take the keys and go.
Okay.
But I had to wait till somebody relieved me, till the next telephone operator relieved me, because you couldn't leave the phones unmanned, right?
Right, yeah.
So, I'm sitting there waiting, and one of my friends comes back and goes, quick, hurry up. Keith's been drinking since yesterday. This guy drank his whole fucking check. Because you used to get your check, and you used to go to the grocery store and check and cash it.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
no, so he drank his entire paycheck?
Oh, yeah, and he lived in the confines of the precinct. So you would see his car, like, on Tremont Avenue, like, dude, you live 3 blocks away. You're not even supposed to do that.
Yeah.
And then one time they got really pissed the midnights because he stammered in and he was laying on the couches. You know, those guys come in, they're on their meal, they eat, they kick back, they watch TV, they sit, you know, we had couches and stuff like that. Take a little nap, you know, whatever. This fucking slob's there belching and like they like, made him the broom.
The what?
The broom. He just was like the janitor.
Oh, he
was the broom. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He used to go to the Yankee Stadium detail. So they would go, like, in May, mm-hmm. and then they don't come back till like, October.
Okay.
So they're at the stadium. That's a whole different thing. So they're, like, you know, they have their own little, especially, right. like, in that at that time, you know, they had their own little setup there. And
right.
you didn't mess
yeah.
with it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever get to work Yankee Stadium?
I did. I remember it was one night when Billy Joel was there, and the next night Nelson Mandela was there.
Oh, wow.
And the lieutenant said, you can't watch the Billy Joel concert. And if anybody catches you and says you can watch it, you tell them why. You say the fat fucking lieutenant from the detail, because that's what he was. He's a big fat lieutenant. And you're like, okay. And so I remember, like, Billy Joel, I walked by the stage and I saw him, like, a little bit. But Nelson Mandela, you were allowed to go in the stadium and listen if you wanted to. But I did get... So you used to get the stadium detail.
Mm-hmm.
And during the playoffs a few times, one night they go... They give us the stadium detail, and it was on top of a roof. And
we
were waiting to get the keys. And so we were playing catch with the football, and IAB came in. And they go, how come you're not where you're supposed to be? And we're like, we are where we're supposed to be. This is the address of the building. Because
right.
like in that precinct, you know, it would be like 2 buildings, and they'd be joined, and it would, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, this is it. And this Detective Mike explained, listen, no, this is the... And without missing a beat, the super came downstairs and goes, guys, I have the keys to unlock the roof for you. And so he unlocked the roof, and then Willie Hayes got a radio from one of the tenants, and we were up there listening to the Yankees. And so then the chief found out, like, that the inside people were getting the inside of the stadium, the
right.
ones that worked admin.
Oh.
I mean, we were out doing buying bustles.
Yeah, yeah.
So the next night we were in the stadium, and they were like, yeah, you don't look at the players. You got to look straight ahead. You're not allowed to look around, but you do. You know how to do that.
Yeah, yeah,
like when
okay.
the Pope comes, you're not supposed to look at him, but you go like that.
Right, you check it out.
Like,
okay.
You know, because I want to look at the Pope.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Was security, like... How do I want to phrase this? Because they used to let people, like, run onto the stadium for, like, wins and stuff like that. Like,
oh, yeah, but, no, you don't do that anymore.
Right, no, of course, yeah.
Because the first time the old stadium, they redid it. They let people out on the field, and people were taking the dirt.
Oh, yes. I remember this
seats
now.
Seats
yeah,
and
yeah,
stuff,
yeah.
But they were taking the turf, and that's...
Right.
And
that's,
it's not like, at that point, it wasn't like they're building a new stadium across the street where you can take the turf.
Right.
You know, we had to use it.
Yeah. Right. No, it was... Yeah.
And then there was a period of time where the Yankee Stadium was getting fixed, and they played at Shea. And so one day, the Yankees hit a home run, and you saw, like, Mr. Met come up, but then he went back down.
Oh, I love that. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah. When Daryl was up.
That's... Oh, my God. Did you ever see that documentary about the... What is it? The 86 Mets? There's a book, The Bad Boys Won. But I watched... Oh, it's something...
It's 30 for 30.
There's 30 for 30, yes. It's
Doc and the Reverend or something.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
There's... Oh, my God. And they were having sex with the fans in between innings.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy.
They were animals.
My God.
Keith Hernandez was smoking cigarettes in the dugout, drinking a beer at the thing.
It's crazy to think about now with, like, how the game is played and all that. But the thing now is a lot of people getting caught for betting. That's a new thing now.
Yeah, and then the guy... You know, remember you asked me if the new... announcer of the Yankee that replaced John Sterling. Mm-hmm. I like this guy because he's an older guy.
I do too.
And
yeah.
he's knowledgeable. And one day he said, you know when they have like the meetings on the mound?
Mm-hmm.
And so one day they had a meeting on the mound. It was the Los Angeles Dodgers. And the umpire came over and was said to Tommy Lasorda, like, are we wrapping this up? And he goes, I don't know. What do you think we should do? What do you think we should do? What's our next play? Like, you don't get that now.
No,
and Billy Martin used to kick dirt.
Yeah,
that's my screensaver on my phone.
No, is it Billy Martin? Get out.
Yeah.
Oh,
Billy
my
Martin
God.
Kicking dirt on the umpire.
Yeah. I mean, and that's.
And he'd always get thrown out of the game.
Yeah.
And then he'd drive home drunk.
My God. That's.
Yeah.
And now, are you a fan of Boone now?
I like Aaron Boone. And did you see it last year when the fan. There was a fan behind.
Yes,
and he was like, he reminded me of me, like, I didn't even do anything.
Yes, that was, for anyone listening that doesn't know, it was Aaron Boone yelling at the umpire, and the umpire said, one more word, you're out. And the fan behind
him
said something.
Yeah, it was
the fan behind. Aaron Boone got thrown out, like you said, he's like, I didn't say anything, whatever. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I know we're not a sports podcast, but I love talking Yankees with you. Are you nervous about this season? How do you feel?
I don't know. A little bit, you know, because Anthony Volpe, he's having a little struggle.
I feel bad for him.
I do too.
Because he's 24, 23, I think. And like, I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
Everyone's an idiot when you're 23.
Yeah.
And to have the pressure of New York on you, you're not going to play your best.
No. And I think they just got somebody that's pretty good from, I forget where they
said. They just traded for Ryan McMahon.
Yeah.
Which he played well yesterday. And they got this guy they've been going after, Ahmed Rosario.
Yeah.
It's another guy, so hopefully he can help out.
Yeah, and I think that you have to see till the end of the week. They have until the end of the week.
Yeah, they have another, I think, including today, 5 days till they trade for more people. But the mentality is, right, it's like, okay, Judge is out for 10 days. Do you really believe you have a chance to go all the way with this team? Otherwise, you maybe should sell a few things and try again next year, but the Yankees don't do that.
No.
That's not, you know, so. Were you always a Yankee fan, Michelle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll watch the Mets.
Sure.
If the Yankees aren't on, and they're fun to watch, and I do like their broadcast much better.
Do you really?
I can't stand Paul O'Neill.
Oh.
I cannot stand him.
One of my close Yankee friends said the same thing.
I cannot stand him.
He goes, he's an airhead. And
you know what it is? I like when A-Rod is there. I like when Joe Girardi is there.
I love Girardi.
I like
he's
when
great.
Bill Big Poppy, when he does, because they're students of baseball.
Yes.
And they understand, and like Big Poppy was saying one time, he used to go up to the plate and there'd be a pitch that he saw and he liked it and he wouldn't swing at it.
Right.
And so the guy would think, oh, he doesn't like that pitch, and then he'd hit it.
Yes.
Yeah, like cool shit like that.
I love, and that's what people, I think, when we talk about baseball, don't understand.
It's
the
like
mental
a chess game.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Right? Because that would be, and I remember, because I think I watched the broadcast, he said that, because the advanced hitters would fuck with the pitchers, right? They would be like, you know, but, it's the best.
Yeah.
But. Michelle, tell the people where they can find you on social media.
Under my name, Michelle Durante, at Instagram and Facebook.
And Facebook, okay.
And Facebook.
And you're on TikTok as well, right?
I am on TikTok and YouTube. It's just my name, Michelle Durante.
Michelle Durante. We'll tell the people, Michelle, you're a hilarious comedian. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you
it means
for
so
having
much.
Me.
Absolutely. And here's to hoping we left you a little higher.
Yeah.
There we go. We did it.